Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady. Live only on Netflix.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
It's only a kick, a jump, a block, it's only a serve, it's only a tackle, a run, it's only for the fans. After all, it's only pressure. You got this. Adidas.
Hello and welcome to the Man City Show, John Stoglund standing in for Nigel Rothbaum. So one game we dominated and lost, another game in which we weren't at our best but somehow we won. You might call a tale of two cities. With apologies to Charles Dickens, let me introduce our panel for tonight. Sarah Messenger's with us. Hi Sarah.
Hi John.
Paul Demme's with us. Hi Paul.
Hi there John.
And Graham Reed is with us. Hi Graham.
Hi John.
Welcome to you all. I'd like to kick off with Pep's rant, as some newspapers call it, or carefully analytical, considered remarks after the game on Saturday, in which he complained about the authorities making City play that game on Saturday. Sarah, first of all, did he have a point?
He did have a point. I think, I mean, there's a mixed views. If you go into this seedy world of Twitter, there are mixed views around, you know, on one hand, you only end up with these pressures when you're successful, and you're successful because you've got a great team, and you can't be buying all these players and have a big squad and then moan when certain players are tired. But on the other hand, it was ridiculous that City's game, solely for the purposes of TV, ended up being played on the Saturday, when anyone thinking with any degree of logic would have played it on the Sunday, bearing in mind United and Coventry had had a free week. So I think the thing that I do feel really strongly about is that we've seen this season how many squads, and this is not just about City, have suffered a lot of injuries. And I do wonder how much of that is connected to the fatigue of how much we expect the top level footballers to play. And so we want the game, we want it on all the time. You know, we want as many matches as possible televised at times that suit us. But the reality is they're all human beings, and we probably are putting too much pressure on players at a lot of clubs, not just at City.
Indeed. It does seem crazy to me, Paul, that, you know, the other two teams involved didn't have a game midweek. We did, yet we were forced to play on Saturday by the television authorities, I assume, in the main. Although the FA must have had some hand in it, wouldn't you not agree?
Yeah, I totally agree with Pep's view on it. I did read somewhere that one of the reasons that Chelsea City couldn't be on the Sunday was that Chelsea have got a game on Tuesday coming up, so that would have been insufficient time. But they could have moved the Chelsea match back. It's television again. BBC chose City. They had the slot on the Saturday. Could they swap it to the Sunday? Possibly, but then they've got to liaise with, I don't know which station it's on, Sky or TNT, for the Arsenal-Chelsea game, which is now scheduled for Tuesday. Could they have then shifted that back to Wednesday? I don't know. It gets a little bit complex. But Pepper's got a point. We shouldn't be made to play. OK, nobody knew it would run into extra time against Real Madrid. But then it finishes at, even if it doesn't go into extra time, finishes at almost 10 o'clock. And then you've got a game 3 days later. People say, well, you play every 3 or 4 days when you're in the these competitions. And people have got a point. It's difficult. I appreciate that players are fatigued. And that, as Sarah's point, there will be more injuries. I don't know what the right answer is. We like to watch our teams. They're on television. Television's paying for it. Had they put it back to Sunday and moved everything else around, people would still have complained, I'm sure. But that's football nowadays. It's very difficult.
It is difficult, but I agree with you both. I think he had a very good point. Graham, let's just come to you. He's threatening not to take part in the pre-match or post-match interviews as a consequence of that. Quite frankly, I think it'd be mighty relief for all concerned if Pep didn't do the pre-match interviews. He clearly hates him. Says nothing, doesn't he?
He's a man that constantly looks irritated by the interviewees. Absolutely. Anyway, doesn't he?
Absolutely.
Yeah, so and if he doesn't, I expect he'll get fined or whatever. But I agree with both Paul and Sarah that the problem is they could have moved it. Obviously, they could have moved it to Sunday. But the problem is it's not coincident that Liverpool and Arsenal both lost last weekend. They both struggled in Europe because, you know, if you're at the top level and play at the intensity that the three teams are playing at, inevitably the wheels come off at some point. And it's difficult as a fan because you know you're watching some of the best players, and we're very lucky who we get to watch. But if you watch De Bruyne in extra time against Real Madrid, I mean, he looked like a man that could just run the marathon and could just getting over the line. I mean, it's just crazy what they're expecting these guys to do. So, but there you go. That's where we're at with it.
Which brings us neatly to the decision by the FA, or pending decision by the FA and the authorities, to actually scrap FA Cup replays. Sarah, your view on that?
I think that's a terrible decision. And much as on one level it might benefit teams like City, I think the whole spirit of the Cup is about this, you know, we use it as cliche, but this the magic of the Cup. It's about lower level teams having a great away day at a big club, or having a home game, you know, getting a draw, taking them back to their ground, or even getting a draw at their ground and then going to play at the Etihad, Anfield, the Swamp, whatever. And that to me is a really important ingredient in the FA Cup. And I think to scrap it for the benefit, let's be frank, of only a very small number of teams benefit from it. And you start to wonder how much it's about coefficients in Europe and all the things that are not really the business of the vast majority of football fans. So I think it's a terrible decision.
I agree with you entirely. Paul, your view on that, particularly bearing in mind what they've said, is that they simply can't fit all the games into one season.
Well, there's several methods to get around that. I totally agree with what you're both saying. Several ways of getting around that. Reduce the Premier League to 18 teams, but there'll be a lot of people against that. That would reduce four games a season straight away. Don't increase the Champions League number of games, which they're doing for next season as well. Again, European superpowers want to have more games, not the clubs necessarily, but UEFA. So the Champions League construct next year means, I can't remember how many games we might play, but it's 8 or 10 games in the qualifying sequence rather than 6. So that's taking...
Eight,
thank you. Taking more weeks out. The FA Cup is a special tournament, or has been, for a lot of the smaller clubs as well. And as Sarah said, it's going to benefit the top half dozen, 6, 7, 8 teams come the FA Cup. So City will benefit. Well,
the romance will go, won't it? The romance will go. I mean, the days of Hereford United, etc., you know, taking on and beating was it Newcastle United? I can't remember.
Yeah, it was.
You know, that kind of game. And a perfect example of it on Sunday at Wembley, you know, with Man United and Coventry City, they'll never, ever forget.
Of course. And one way around it, perhaps from a financial perspective, is to start giving a greater percentage of the gates money to the smaller clubs. So if City draw a Grimsby Town or whoever it might be in the third round of the Cup, I don't know, I think it's 25% of the gate receipts they get now. Give them 75% of the gate receipts. Do something that helps the smaller clubs generate income because they need it.
Couldn't agree more. Graham, one point I would put to you that, you know, is that the FA are supposed to be the guardians of the FA Cup, aren't they? This seems to say to me, the people who run the show are FIFA and the UEFA.
Absolutely. And obviously, I think we all would agree with this, that football's become very money orientated. And whether it be FIFA or UEFA, every decision they seem to make basically boils down to making more and more and more money. And it's like too many games for the players and the replays, etc. It's always comes down to the finances and which way they're going about it. And it will help the bigger clubs having no replays. But and obviously City haven't had many replays. But for those of us, and I think all four of us are on here, will remember when it used to be replays until final. I remember going to the second replay against Watford only 20 years ago.
Yeah.
And Arsenal-Liverpool once played in about five matches. You know, it's just... So we're already down to just one replay, then penalties. And I think they should stay like that.
Some would say, Sarah, that, you know, if clubs like Man City are so concerned about the health of their players, why go on these stupid pre-season tours around America where the main purpose of the exercise is to flog shirts?
Well, they might have a point. let's be frank, they don't go for the suntans, do they? They go because it's exposing the brand to a wider audience. Yes. And they think very carefully about where they go in terms of which part of the world they want to have the most impact on in any given summer. I mean, you know, we can look at all these arguments and we can agree with the sentiment behind them. You know, Graham's right, football's become totally about money. Paul's right, there's always different solutions which never get pursued for one reason or another. At the heart of all of this, though, is us as fans. I mean, we're all in love with City. We're enjoying the ride of our life. It's brought us more pleasure than we could have ever imagined. Mm. We're going to love them and we're going to support them and we're going to back them no matter what we go through. But the same is true for every other club, and every other club's podcast would be having the same conversation. And the big problem is that fans are about 17th on the list of priorities when it comes to making decisions about football.
Couldn't agree more. And I have to say, you know, hand on heart, broadcasters as much to blame as anyone else. Let's turn to the game on Sunday. And Paul, your verdict on that match. Were we a bit lucky, or was it a classic example of Man City's now superb resilience?
We were a little bit lucky in that a top-class striker might have put us to the sword. They had the better chances, but City were resilient. I thought the players were magnificent, considering they come after 120 minutes against Real Madrid, poured everything into that game. He played a very similar team. I was surprised at the players that were there. I must admit, I'm very surprised, I think a lot of people were, that De Bruyne was named man of the match. I thought some of his passing was pretty poor from him. I know he pressed a lot, but
he looked knackered to me.
He looked knackered. That's my excuse as well for him. Quite a few of the players looked absolutely, particularly once you got past 70 minutes, they looked out of it. And the more the match went on, I feared for us being able to create anything. So when we scored that goal in the 84th minute, I was, like all City fans, I was ecstatic. It was a tough game on Wednesday, and then it was a tough game on Saturday. It wasn't a great game on Saturday. It was far from it. But had Chelsea had a top-class striker there, I think we might have been out of the cup. But that's football. They didn't. We took our chance. And it maybe is a bit of payback from our unluckiness, if that's the right word, against Real Madrid 3 days earlier. Because in that game, which we'll talk about, we were very unlucky.
Let's turn to Graham. What positives did you take away from that game on Saturday, Graham?
Well, the resilience. Without question, the resilience, the mental strength that they had, the will to win. And as Paul said, obviously Chelsea had some really, really good chances. But we did as well. I mean, and I totally agree about the De Bruyne comment, but he played the pass of the match quite early on to Foden, how he spotted him and the pace of the pass. And Foden's gone round the goalkeeper. So it's that was a really good chance very early on. So we had our own chances to score as well. But I came home on the train thinking to myself, having gone to Madrid on Wednesday, how well we played 30 shots and didn't manage to score. That's obviously our own fault. But they deserve to win on Wednesday, and possibly on Saturday, the players deserve that victory overall. It was a pretty tight game. I mean, the Chelsea did have the better chances. But overall, I didn't ever think to myself, oh, we're always in the game. And I thought their mental strength was immense.
Can we talk about a few individual performances? Sarah, come to you next. Ortega in particular, our standing goalkeeper, who to me is increasingly looking as good, if not slightly better, than the number one.
Well, there's a bold statement, John. a lot of people are saying, aren't they, that
a pair of hands.
It's a real upgrade on anything else we've had as our reserve goalkeeper. I think you measure that by the fact that none of us are remotely concerned when we see Ortega's name on the team sheet as opposed to Edison. That's not to be disrespectful to Edison, who's been largely fantastic for us. I mean, I think you lose a little bit in terms of the passing ability of Edison, but then, you know, one might argue you gain in the shot-stopping ability of Ortega. So he's a great keeper. He's a really, really good keeper. And I hope City can hold on to him, because apparently there's a few people sniffing around for the summer. So hopefully we keep hold of him.
Let me ask Paul, would he be your number one or number two?
Great question. He'd be equal with Edison to me at the moment. His distribution is pretty good, but Edison's is absolutely superb. His shot stopping is very good. Edison's is good. So it depends who you're playing, maybe. If you're up against a weaker team, perhaps you can play Edison, if I look at it that way, because he won't have as many shots to stop. If you're up against a stronger team that might press us and have more shots, maybe put Ortega in goal. I'm not a Pep. I don't have to make that decision, but maybe that's a way of evaluating it. They're both great goalkeepers. So, and Sarah said, when Ortega's name comes up to playing goal, I'm totally relaxed.
I wonder if he can take penalties, Graham.
I don't know if he can take penalties. His distribution is quite good, and he certainly would get most teams number one, but I'm still going to stick with Edison. I think what he does and his distribution is absolutely fantastic, but I really like the Ortega, and I think I agree with the other two. Every time you see him, you never panic. It's not like the last two reserve goalies we've had.
All right, we're still with you, Graham. A word about Bernardo. I mean, obviously, deeply dismayed against Real Madrid, but made up for it on Saturday, didn't he?
Well, he's just unbelievable. And the worst thing about Bernardo is when he goes, which obviously every summer it appears that he's off to Spain or wherever, that'll be the time when you really appreciate him, because he has been fabulous. And obviously, the Haalands and the De Bruyners and Agüeros before that were all the sort of headline names. Week in, week out, his effort and his contribution and his mental strength, just even in the last couple of minutes of any games when he takes it in, he's the best I've ever seen at keeping it in the corner and getting another throw on to tick the minutes down. He's just a fantastic footballer.
Also, sir, a great ambassador for the club. Whenever he appears on the telly, you know, you have a safe pair of hands broadcasting the Man City message.
Absolutely. And also, I think he's very popular. If you ever watch the documentaries they do and everything, he always seems very popular amongst his teammates. So he's obviously a really good guy as well. So, but you wouldn't want to play against him because he's a dreadful. He could wind up a saint. So, you know, I'm pleased he's a Blue.
All right. Here's a controversial one for you, Sarah. Were we right to sell Palmer?
She's kidding.
Well, it's a good question. If we'd been asked that question 9 months ago, we'd have perhaps been more assertive with our answers and perhaps a bit quicker with them. Bottom line is, I trust the club and Pep's judgment. So on that basis, yes, we were right to sell him. He's a really, really good player. The Chelsea fans I know can barely believe that they've got their hands on him.
He's their best player.
He is. But he's looking good with a team of, I wouldn't say average, but players who are not as good as City's players. So it's not hard for him to stand out in the company he's currently keeping. He apparently wanted to go for 2 years. He believed he was ready. He wanted to play regularly in the Premier League. And Pep wasn't willing to give him that, and obviously had Doku in mind. I'm sure that he's somebody else we might have a chat about in a minute. On balance, to get 42 million they got for him? I think that probably was a good deal for City.
Good deal. Final word on him to you, Paul. Benefit of mature reflection, which is easy for all of us. Would you have kept him?
Very difficult. He didn't want to stay because he wanted more first-team football. So the question we've all got to ask ourselves is, had he stayed at City, would he have got as much opportunity as he appears to be getting at Chelsea? No. I'm struggling to think where he would play in the team that we had that played on Saturday. The only place I can think he plays is instead of a Grealish or a Bernardo. And at the end of the day, Grealish is having a reasonable run at the moment. Bernardo is Bernardo, a brilliant player. I don't see where Palmer would have played for City. And as Sarah just said, effectively, he's playing in a weaker team, and he's the star man. If he played for City, he still wouldn't have been getting the minutes that he's got playing for Chelsea. So I think it probably was the right decision for both the club, the amount of money we got for him, and for the player himself. I wish him the best of luck playing for Chelsea and doing well, and hopefully he'll get in the England squad from his perspective. But
you've queued up my next point perfectly for Graham. Jack Grealish, I've not always been a great fan of Grealish, but I did think that at the weekend he played rather well. In fact, it was rather a shame he had to go off. You agree?
Yeah, I thought he played really well Wednesday and Saturday. It was a shame he had to go off. And I think, but I've read today, funny enough, and whether you never know with these with the papers and things, that rumours are that City are prepared to sell him, which would be a shame from
really?
My point of view.
Really? I didn't know that.
Yeah, no, it's been all over the place today. So for up to 60 million or something. So that would be disappointing because when he's on a run of form, and obviously last season's well documented, and I agree, he played really well. I went to Copenhagen, he did really well out there for half an hour and then got injured. So it's been a bit stop-start for him. But in the last four or five games, he was good at Palace. He was exceptional at Palace. I know De Bruyne was man of the match, but Grealish wasn't far off it. And I thought he's done really well. And against teams like Madrid and obviously at Wembley in a semi-final, I thought he's been you know, certainly good enough to play in our first 11.
OK, we're going to take a break there. When we come back, we'll talk about that game against Real Madrid and, of course, the prospect of an FA Cup final against the boys from the Swamp.
With threats to our nation waiting around every corner, adaptability is more important than ever. When conditions change without notice, quick strategic thinking is crucial. And with obstacles consistently impending, determination is essential in overcoming them. It's this willingness, decisiveness, and resilience that sets Marines apart. With our fighting spirit, we don't just fight battles, we win them. Marines are the constant our nation counts on to fight the unknown. And through adaptable problem solving, we do just that. Learn more at marines.com.
Hello, it is Ryan, and we could all use an extra bright spot in our day, couldn't we? Just to make up for things like sitting in traffic, doing the dishes, counting your steps, you know, all the mundane stuff. That is why I'm such a big fan of Chumba Casino. Chumba Casino has all your favorite social casino style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere with daily bonuses. That should brighten your day a little. Actually, a lot. So sign up now at chumbacasino.com. That's ChumbaCasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
With Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
Dearly beloved, we are gathered here today to... Has anyone seen the bride and groom?
Sorry, sorry, we're here. We were getting lucky in the limo and we lost track of time.
No, Lucky Land Casino. With cash prizes that add up quicker than a guest registry.
In that case, I pronounce you lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Daily bonuses are waiting. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Welcome back to the Man City Show. Let's talk now about that game against Real Madrid. It was torture to watch, wasn't it? Absolute torture. Let's start with you, sir. Your emotions watching that game.
Well, I felt really proud of how they played, if I'm honest. And if you can get your head around a defeat reasonably quickly in a strange sort of way, I just thought they could not have done more. They absolutely dominated Real Madrid. And I, again, those are words that I never thought would come out of my mouth as a City fan. We deserved to win over the two legs. We were the better team. We were up against, but you know, Real Madrid are a good team and they've got a very, very skillful and wily manager. And he set them up to do what they did and it worked for them. So, yeah, it's hugely disappointing, but more palatable because of the fact we won the Champions League last year and because... I genuinely don't, you know, we're not sitting here going, oh, well, why did Pep pick that team? Or so-and-so had a bad game. They played really well. We just didn't have the luck with us on the night. And that's football.
Paul, what could we have done? What should we have done better, if anything?
I'm struggling on that one. The only thing I can think of, I'm not blaming him, was Kevin De Bruyne, after he'd scored that goal, putting the other one in the net as well. That chance, 9 times out of 10, he gets it on target and at least makes the goalkeeper work for it. Not blaming him. You know, we were a bit unlucky. Real Madrid sat back and defended, and they defended well. Ancelotti learnt a lot from their 4-0 defeat the previous season and said, we can't afford to do that. We're playing against Manchester City. Manchester City are at least our equals, if not our peers at the moment. Therefore, we'll have to sit back and defend to the nth degree to stop City scoring. And they did it for a large part. They got lucky. The two goals they scored in Madrid were deflections. The ball that Ederson then saved, that they then scored, come straight back out to him. You know, those are the small margins. Had Ederson pushed it away a bit further, then it wouldn't come back and they score the goal. But again, that's football. I was upset. I was disappointed. But I got over it fairly quickly. I would have been more disappointed had we then lost to Chelsea. That would have been two big defeats in 3 days. And I think that would have dented their confidence going into the Premier League run in which we now approach.
Graham, my next point may sound a very naive one, but I just watch those games and I see us playing, you know, beautiful possession football or to put it cynically, tippy-tappy football around the box. Why don't we just have a shot?
Yeah, well, sometimes you think that, but I would say I sort of agree with Paul wholeheartedly. Arsenal and Real Madrid are two of the better, if not two of the best teams in Europe. And both of them have come to our place in big games and basically lined up a little like Brentford would, you know, with everyone behind the ball and trying to get breakaways with better players, of course. But that's such a compliment to Pep and to the team and how much respect we have. And I came home, I drive home 3 hours afterwards, so I have a lot of time to reflect. And I thought to myself, I wasn't as disappointed as I thought I would be. I agree with Paul, had we lost to Chelsea, it would have been worse. They gave it their all. They was far better side. And basically, as it stands, I genuinely believe we're the best team in Europe, not just because I'm a fan, because of the way other people come to us and the way they set up. So overall, I thought it was a really good performance. The shooting and the, I mean, because I obviously played football myself in the 70s and 80s, sometimes they get it out wide and I think, why don't they cross it? Because that's what we would have all done.
Me too, all the time. Yeah. To go back to Sunday's game briefly, as soon as Kevin De Bruyne did that and took it to the byline, we scored.
Yeah, I know. You've got a 6'4" centre forward and you think, I know he's not the greatest header of the ball, but he must be able to, there must be one or two times he could get on the end of something, but we don't. It's just not how we do it. And sometimes when I get frustrated, I then think, well, we won the treble last year, which has only been done twice in 120 odd years. So maybe I shouldn't moan too much. Maybe what's going on is great. But it can be, you know, especially for people of our generation who it's all been a bit quicker, playing down the channels and, you know, holding it up. And we just don't play like that. And we're very successful doing what we do. So, you know, I usually come away from most games really happy. So that's good enough.
Well, it's easy to forget how successful we have been. Nevertheless, I'll put the final point on this issue to you, Sarah. Is Pep obsessed with possession?
Yes. I mean, it's absolutely. He considers it a criminal offence to give the ball away. So I share the frustration you're all articulating, and I know that other fans will say that sometimes City can be boring to watch because the ball just, you know, they keep the ball, it passes from side to side, and every 6 or 7 minutes there might be a really good attack where they manage to find the space and get round the back, etc. I mean, I don't find it boring to watch, but I can see why other fans might do. But he won't allow them to just whip the ball in the box on the off chance that, you know, 3 out of every 14 times Haaland might get his head on it, because that means there's 11 times we've given the ball away. So so I guess we just accept that he plays in a way which isn't necessarily quite as kind of exhilarating as some other teams. But, you know, you can't question the success we've had.
You mentioned the striking Viking. It hasn't been striking too much of late. League Two player, according to Roy Keane, of course, in some respects at least. Loss of form, just a bad run. What's going on, Paul, do you think?
I think he's not having the greatest of time. His injuries might have played a part on him. De Bruyne not being fully fit, not playing those balls to him that he was doing time and time again last season. And there's probably a combination. He's had a few one-on-ones that he's not scored. Confidence might be dented as well. He's a top-class striker. He's not adding as much to the team as some other strikers would do, that's clear. But City know that when they bought him, when they bought him. And we've got to trust him for the next season and see what he can do. He's still, he's a joint top scorer in the Premier League. And he's missed
80
games.
Goals in a season and a half, isn't it? Something over that.
Yeah, goals. Something ridiculous. So he's going to score goals. And what he does in games as well is he takes the attention of two central defenders or moves out wide, and therefore he's creating space for other players. And Foden has benefited, I think, when he's been on the pitch, because he's scored a lot of goals this season. And other players get the space then to move around and create opportunities. So I think we've got to take Haaland for being not just a goal scorer, but a creator by taking other players out of the game as well.
One other player I want to mention before we finish on individuals, and that's Doku. I'm a big fan of Doku. I think his final ball lacks a bit of something. He doesn't always find his man. But he lights up the crowd and he lights up the game. Got great pace, great strength. And for me, I put him in the head of Grealish virtually every time. What about you, Graham?
Well, to a certain degree. I mean, he was a little frustrating to start with, but he's obviously improved greatly over the last few weeks. And he's obviously very direct. again, his problem will be Pep won't want him to lose the ball as much as he probably does, because obviously he takes people on, so therefore he's not going backwards and square that Grealish would. But he is very exciting. It's a little bit old-fashioned wing play in the way he goes about
perhaps
it with Peter Barnes, isn't it?
Perhaps so, that's what I like him.
Yes, exactly. It's like going back to Peter Barnes in the 70s. You know, it's great coming off that left
Roy
wing.
Roy Clark.
Oh, well, it might be a bit too far for me, John, I'm afraid.
I'll give you that one then.
Yeah, okay. So anyway, he's he is very exciting. And I think we all forget sometimes when he plays a bad final pass, he's only 21. So inevitably, if he's a good trainer and he wants to learn and listen to the best coach around, he, by the time he's 24, 25, he could be frightening.
You indicated you might want to say a word about Doku, Sarah.
I agree with everything that Graham said. I think he changed us on Saturday. I don't want to say he changed the game. He didn't, but he suddenly provided a sort of spark that felt like it was missing. And obviously, he was involved in the goal. He was doing exactly the opposite of what Grealish did. I think that's just astute, actually, from Pep. He's got Grealish, who he knows is one of the best at retaining the ball, even though sometimes we all get frustrated that he turns back and we don't. Where's the Aston Villa version of Jack Grealish gone? But then on the other hand, if Grealish keeps us in the more difficult games for 70, 75 minutes, and then Doku comes on against a tiring defence and does what he did on Saturday, you know, crack on, Pep. That's fine with me.
Just coincidentally, the last two fullbacks of Real Madrid and Chelsea, when Doku's come on, they both managed to get injured and go off. And I was with a friend on Saturday and I said, that old Chelsea fullback, he's had Doku come on and run at him four times. And he's thought, I know what I'm going to do. I'm going to get myself a little bit of cramp and off I go. And so that's interesting.
You're all spinning. Right, quick word about the next week. We've got Brighton and we've got Forest. Paul, your thoughts on that?
Well, a couple of challenging games. Brighton, mid-table-ish, not playing brilliantly at the moment. Forest fighting for their lives. But again, they're not brilliant at the moment. They're far from brilliant. We've got to be looking to take 6 points. It's as simple as that. Because I think the run-in now, those are two games we've got to win. Arsenal and Liverpool both play before we play Brighton, so they could have an even bigger lead, albeit we'll have two games in hand, Brighton being one of them. We've got to play a strong team on Thursday night against Brighton. And we should be good enough. We can't do what we did against Forest last season, where we 1-0 up, Pepper the goal, missed a couple of honest sitters, and then they got a late equaliser, didn't they? So, we've got to win both those games. It's as simple as that, and we're good enough to win both those games.
All right, a last word from you all on the prospects of Manchester United at Wembley in the FA Cup final. First of all, Graham.
Oh, well, I'm very excited because I think we'll win. Man United, when we played them at home, about 6 weeks ago, I thought that's the worst United I've seen in ages. And just from football, not because they're the rivals across the city, the manager definitely isn't good enough to run a top-level club because they're disorganised, they have no way or structure of playing. And that game at City was, we won 3-1, we could have been 5 or 6. And I think... I think if we play well on the day, we'll win comfortably.
Sarah?
Too much of my life was spent dreading games against United, usually because they hammered us or humiliated us. And so I'm just going to enjoy the fact that we will beat them in the FA Cup final. We're miles better as a team. We won't be distracted by the Champions League final the week after. I'll take it. Two cup finals in a row, winning them both and beating them in the process. So I'm feeling very confident about it.
Are you confident, Paul?
Yes, you've got to be. We're a better team than them. I think I put on our chat, I'm not sure if everybody saw it, this is the first time in 120 years that the same two finalists have played against each other. The last time it happened was 1883. I looked this one up because I'm a saddo. And it was Blackburn Rovers won the first match 2-1. And then won the second match 2-0. So bring it on.
Exactly. Thank you all very much indeed for your contributions. Enjoy your week. And don't forget, folks at home, Man City Show is what you want to see and hear. Thank you all.
If you want to advertise on or sponsor this show, check us out at playbackmedia.co.uk.
Sports Social Podcast Network.
Step into the world of power, loyalty, and luck.
I'm going to make him an offer he can't refuse.
With family, cannolis, and spins mean everything.
Now, you want to get mixed up in the family business.
Introducing The Godfather at ChumbaCasino.com. Test your luck in the shadowy world of The Godfather slot.
Someday, I will call upon you to do a service for me.
Play The Godfather now at ChumbaCasino.com.
Welcome to the family.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply.